Okay. Thank you, Thomas, and thank you, Roger, for the invitation, and most importantly, for having organized this very nice conference with a lot of interesting contributions, new ideas, and just a good way to show the research on climate change economics is moving forward. My paper is going to be much simpler than the ones that you listened to yesterday and today. Simpler because it's going to present some results coming from a very complicated model, or many complicated models, and the effort was really to gather the outputs of these many models and try to use these outputs to assess the INDCs that have been submitted for the COP21 conference in Paris. It's certainly an important topic because I believe that many of you, but certainly outside this room, a lot of institutions, organizations, governments, NGOs are trying to understand whether the submitted INDCs are good enough, and we'll try to understand what that means, to tackle the climate change problem. And the comparison of the INDCs is a tricky thing, as we will see in a minute. What's the situation? 155 countries have submitted their own INDCs, 127 because the EU is a set of 28 countries, but in reality, 155. This is already a great achievement. I think that the French in this room should be proud of the government that has been able to achieve this kind of outcome. And Laurence Toubiana, who is the chief negotiator, did a great job in stimulating and inducing 155 countries to adopt pledges, commitments to control their own greenhouse gas emissions. Just to give you an idea, these INDCs cover 86% of total emission, whereas the Kyoto Protocol just 15-16%. And we will see that even in terms of of emission reduction, this is much, much more than what we have seen before. Nevertheless, there are several problems. In particular, these INDCs, these commitments, are very heterogeneous. Sometimes they deal with total emission, global emissions in a given country or in a given region. In other cases, they focus on emission intensity targets, so emissions relative to GDP. In other cases, there are emission reduction with respect to the BAU, even more complicated to assess because the BAU is a counterfactual. I don't know what exactly countries have in mind when they pledge to reduce emissions with respect to BAU. And in other cases, there are conditional pledges. They say, I'm going to reduce emission only if I get technological support, I get financial transfer, and so on and so forth. So we're not yet at the end of the process, but still the INDCs are quite important in terms of efforts to control climate change. This is a list of INDCs, and not all the 120 and 27, but the most important are here, and you can see that the values in terms of emission reductions are quite different. See that you get percentage change are very different. They are not absolute numbers, but sometimes a relative number relative to GDP. The reference year is not the same. Sometimes it's 1990, sometimes 2005, 2012, 2007. Countries are quite smart in identifying different measures, different benchmarks, in order to show that it will do something at the lowest possible cost. The period of implementation is different. The target should have been 2030, but it's not 2030 for some countries. The United States, for example, it's 2025. Or Japan, which is very precise in stating it is between 2021 and 2031. So you see, all these differences across pledges, across INDCs make quite complicated to assess the different efforts. Here, I show you a comparison between the INDCs of four countries, US, EU, Russia, and China. And you see here what those commitments imply in terms of total tons of carbons. Here you see what do they imply in terms of emission reduction with respect to a reference year. If we choose, for example, 1990, the US commitment is no longer 28-26, but it becomes 16-14, which is less appealing. You know, why do you want to write 16-14 when you can write 26-28? And even for the EU, if we move from 1990 to 2005, the minus 40 becomes minus 35. So again, there was an opposite interest in choosing the right year. Same for Russia. By choosing 1990, this is the number from minus 30 to minus 25. By choosing 2005, it becomes only 10-18. So of course, Russia decided to use 1990 as a reference year. And China is even more complicated because China is a country in which the commitment, the pledge, is to peak emission by 2030, and in this case, emissions are going to increase with respect to 1990 and 2005, even though there is an important emission reduction with respect to the BAU. So you see that by choosing the reference year, the situation changes quite a lot. And even if we move on and define the INDCs with respect to the population or with respect to GDP, again, if we look at the emission reduction with respect to population, you can see that the INDCs become quite homogeneous, and the EU is the country which is doing less than the other ones. If you look with respect to the GDP, countries doing more are China and Russia, where growth is expected to be larger, and US and the EU are doing more or less the same, but less than Russia and China. So by reading the NDCs in different ways, you can always argue that some countries are doing more, other countries are doing less, and probably this is not the right way to conduct an assessment of the INDCs. So I'll try to do it in a different ways. One preliminary conclusion is the broad coverage in terms of emission reduction. I mean, 86.5% is a great achievement. The top emitters are all on board, including developing countries. And this is another important outcome. The divide between developed and developing countries is over. For the first time, developing countries are accepting to control and sometimes reduce their own emissions without arguing developed countries should do it. We need to grow. We need to support our growth. And we cannot reduce emissions until we achieve the same welfare level of developed countries. Now they understand that climate change is a development issue, and therefore they commit to reduce emission, not because of climate change, but because they want to continue their own economic development. So this is the positive sign, but we still need to understand whether the INDCs that they are submitted to Paris are sufficient to achieve the 2-degree target. Are we on the right track to achieve the 2C target? And whether the burden of these INDCs is fairly distributed. I mean, fairly doesn't mean that all countries are doing the same or doing a similar effort. It should be that developed countries are doing more and developing countries are doing less, because in terms of responsibility, there is still a big difference, and the effort should be allocated by giving more responsibility and therefore more emission reduction to developed countries. So let's see what happens. This is the percent reduction with respect to the BAU in all countries. So in this case, it's with respect to BAU. And I use two possible BAUs. One is SSP2, the other one is SSP1. The SSP are the socioeconomic pathway, and are the new scenario that the IPCC is going to use for the next assessment report. So this, somehow they are sort of official business as usual, because they are the one that have been used and will be used by the IPCC. The SSP1 is more optimistic. It implies that some emission reductions are going to be implemented anyway by countries. SSP2 is less optimistic and foresees an economic growth which is less prone to reduce emission without policies, incentives, and agreements. And this is why, in terms of percent reduction, you get slightly larger number with SSP2 than SSP1. But as you can see, by using the same criteria, so the same BAU for all countries, in terms of emission reduction, you get the Korea, South Africa, and Australia, and in Europe, new Europe means without the new Eastern Europe countries, Korea, South Africa, Australia, new Europe, and USA, and transition economies countries are doing the largest emission reduction. You see INDC low, INDC up. Up means take into account pledges, commitments that are conditional to financial transfers. So if I believe that there will be these financial transfers, this is the right percentage change to look at. If we believe there will be those technological cooperation that developing countries are requiring, this is what we should look at. So in this case, it's even clearer that these are the countries that are making the larger effort in terms of emission reduction with respect to the BAU. And the other countries, you see Latin America and China, East Asia, Middle East and North Africa, and India are those who are reducing less their own emission with respect to the BAU. This is another way of looking at INDC. This is the share of the total emission reductions of the INDC divided by region. So the region which has the largest share is the USA. So USA is going in terms of share or total emission reduction to do more than the other ones. Second is China under SSP2, and it's all Euro under SSP1. So there is a big difference in both share by moving to one business as usual to the other one, from one scenario to the other scenario. So, but again, this gives you a kind of allocation of effort in terms of share of the emission reduction. And this is another way of looking at the INDCs, which shows emission reduction and GDP per capita. And in terms of fairness, I would expect that by moving to the right, so increasing GDP per capita, I would notice an increase in emission reduction. And this is more or less what happens. It's clearer under SSP2, less under SSP1, but still you see that richer countries are also the ones that reduce emission more. So there is a degree of fairness in the submitted INDCs, and the responsibility of developed countries is here. I mean, the USA, old Europe, Canada, Japan, and New Zealand, Korea, South Africa, and Australia. I mean, although these countries are the ones that are reducing more, the developing and emerging countries are reducing less. And again, this is probably good news because it implies consensus for this kind of agreement. This is a very important information. This is something that a lot of people are trying to understand. It's the total emission reduction that can be achieved by the INDCs. Again, emission reduction with respect to what? To a BAU. And again, here this is the SSP1 BAU. This is the SSP2. This is a smaller number because under SSP1, emissions are going to be reduced anyway. So the INDCs are reducing less with respect to the BAU. The number is larger here. But if we believe to SSP2, it's between 20 and 26. 26 including the conditional INDCs, the effort which is conditional to financial or technological support. Kyoto was minus 5.2. So if Paris is a number between 15 and 25, certainly it is between 3 and 5 times larger than the Kyoto Protocol. And by the way, the minus 5.2, the Kyoto Protocol has never been achieved. So the other way around. Emissions have been increasing and increasing over time. So if the INDCs, the Paris Agreement, is going to lead to these numbers, minus 15% or minus 26%, it will be a great success. But this is what they committed. Countries committed to these emission reduction, and the issue is not really what's going to happen in Paris, but what's going to happen beyond Paris, after Paris. Are countries going to implement the measures to achieve these emission reduction, to achieve the pledges they made in Paris? If yes, emissions are going to be reduced as it never happened in the history of the last 50 years. Is this consistent with the 2-degree trajectory? Here you have the answer. Here I plotted 1,000 of trajectories. And these are all those who have been generated in all scenarios produced by the IPCC, with all models have been considered by the IPCCs. So there are about 15 models, and each model has been used to run more than 100 scenarios per model. And you see here all possible trajectories leading to the 2-degree target. Why is it? Why are there many trajectories? Because it depends on assumptions, on population growth, on technological development, on availability of technologies, on the timing of decisions taken by countries, and so on and so forth. There are many assumptions behind it, but these are all of them. So this cloud defined the trajectory, this one defined the trajectory to achieve the 2-degree target according to the models considered by IPCC. Here you have the two BAU, the SSP1 BAU and the SSP2 BAU, and here you have the INDCs, conditional and unconditional. Not bad, I mean, it's not perfect, but still not inconsistent with the trajectory to achieve the 2-degree target. In reality, what matters is not what happens from now to 2030, because this is what happens from now to 2030, which is more or less should be smaller, but so not that bad. But what matters is what was going to happen beyond 2030, because in all these scenarios, the big emission reductions are those beyond 2030. With negative emissions here from 2080, you see there are negative emissions, so we should start removing CO2 from the atmosphere. But this is a situation. So not great, because we could have been able to do better than this, but still not far from the optimal trajectory to achieve the 2-degree target. Then I checked what happened, what's the situation country by country. And again, it crucially depends on the optimal emission pathway. And instead of plotting more than 1,000 pathways, I just choose three of them. This is the Energy Modeling Forum pathway, LIMITS, which is a big European project where 8 important models developed in Europe have been used. And this is the socioeconomic pathway by the IPCC. You see that Europe, by pledging minus 20% in 2020, minus 40% in 2030, is on the right track. Here and here. So the INDC submitted by Europe is certainly on the right track to achieve the 2-degree target. The US is almost on the right track, you see. Minus 26, minus 28 is here. It's here and here. So according to the limits, the European study and the IPCC, the US are on the right track. According to the American study, slightly less, but still close to the target. So even the efforts pledged by the United States is good enough to achieve the 2-degree target. China is not. For example, China, which is pledging a peak in 2030, in order to achieve the 2-degree target, should peak in 2020. It should peak in 2020 in all these three possible scenarios. So peak in 2030 is too late if we want to move towards the 2DC. But there is a reason. The pathway for China, which is consistent with the INDC, would be too costly. It would be too costly in terms of comparison of costs, China, US, and Europe, if China follows the 2C pathway, it would pay a cost which is much larger than the one in EU and in the US. And again, fairness is important. If we want China on board, we cannot assign China an effort or a cost which is much larger than the one, otherwise China is not going to join. I'll show you this kind of statement. This is the cost for Europe. Again, Energy Modeling Forum limits and SSP. The cost for Europe achieving the 2C pathway, it starts from about 0.5% of GDP in 2020. This is sort of consensus number. The minus 20 2020 target costs about 0.5% of GDP. And it increases slowly towards the end of the century to about 5%. The situation is similar in the US, slightly larger, but not that much. Again, starting in 2020 at 0.5% and increasing, in this case, less optimistic, 10%. The US study says about 5%. So, but still small numbers. We're not talking about big numbers. In China, it's quite different. I mean, all these different studies show that the cost of achieving the 2C pathway is going to be much, much higher for China than for the other countries. So that's why, in terms of fairness, it is important to allow China to reduce emissions slightly less than the other countries, so give China time to move on. I have now slides showing country by country, region by region, what's the trajectory implied by the INDC with respect to the reference concentration pathway that has been used in the fourth assessment report. Could be interesting, but they confirm what I just said, that Europe, for example, is on the right track, is almost on the 2.6 RCP. The 2.6 RCP was the most ambitious of the scenario proposed by IPCC, and you can see that it's almost on the 2.6. So Europe is certainly doing something which is consistent with its objective, and even the United States, not bad, because they are here in 2025, probably in 2030, they're going to be down here. So even the US is consistent. This is not true for the other countries, but given that I have just a few minutes, let me skip all these ones. You see, for example, Korea and South Africa and Australia are on the right, are in track in terms of the new European countries are also very close to the right track, but this is not true for transition economies, Russia. This is not true, for example, for Middle East and North Africa, obviously. I mean, these are the oil producing countries. They're not really making any effort to reduce emissions. I want to conclude by looking at this final slide. This shows marginal abatement costs, but not the BAU or not the scenario ones, the ones that are implicit in the INDCs, the marginal abatement costs to achieve the INDCs in 2030, without considering what's going to happen beyond 2030. And you can, this is important information because you can see that the marginal abatement costs are larger in developed countries. This is the USA, old euro, new euro, and South Asia means the emerging economies in South Asia. There's no India. India is here, you've seen it. So China, East Asia, India, Latin America have the lowest marginal abatement costs, where the large abatement costs are in developing countries. So again, as I said before, this is another information providing insight on the fairness of the agreement. Those who have been negotiating have been quite cautious, not only in trying to achieve enough emission reduction to be consistent or fairly consistent with the 2-degree target, but also in allocating the costs and the efforts in a way that countries then decide to sign the agreement. And there is this broad consensus on a pathway which is going to start in Paris. Paris is going to just to be the first step of a long march towards controlling climate change. There will be subsequent COPs that will redefine and enhance the efforts, but certainly what they did was a good compromise between efficiency and equity. This is just going to summarize what I said. Thank you very much.